I got you.
Yeah,
one, two. Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 live and direct here in Glasgow, Scotland. And you call that radio?
We're here with Andy Kettle of Steaming Kettle PR and Montau, which is your artist alias. And you're just about to drop her. By the time you've heard this, it will be dropped. Your debut album, Echoes of the Cosmos.
Yeah.
Amazing. And just first of all, I just want to say thank you. The first time I've spoken to you properly, but we have spoke over the years, we've exchanged multiple emails over the years, and just want to thank you for helping me arrange interviews with some of my favourite artists, like Brother Ali, Slug of Atmosphere, Sarok, Apollo Brown and Fillmore Green, and there's probably more. So I just think what we're going to do today is we're just going to chat about it in two parts, and I think it'd be quite interesting because there's obviously a lot of musicians that listen or watch the show. So to kind of, it's the first time we've ever had anyone on that can maybe give us a little view of the industry through the PR lens. And then the second part, we'll go into your art and the album, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. It's great. It's right up my street. So I suppose first question would be, how did you get involved in music in general?
I started learning music since I was a kid, really. So I went through learning piano when I was 8 and hated it and still stuck with it. And went on to learn a few instruments, stuff like that. I've always played music. I did kind of like bands and jazz bands and orchestras and stuff when I was a kid, and then kind of grew up. And then I've always played it my whole life. And then I did music at uni, so I figured it would be an easier thing to do. And then I did work experience for a label in my final year at uni. And from there, kind of got a passion for wanting to work in the business as well. And then went on from there. I coincided at that point. I got involved in like an indie band. We did pretty well. Alongside that, I was doing like working in a pub 5 nights a week, and then commuting to London and doing work experience internships as well. So there's like a record label, a PR company, a management company, and basically they obviously they pay your travel, but I spent most of the time working pub in the night and then just commuting to London the daytime and working for a place to get experience. So I spent a good year and a half maybe, just doing that to get my foot in the door. So it's like a lot of hard work at the time to get myself, you know, started, so to speak. And that was like mid-2000s maybe. So I don't know how things have changed now, if people want to try to do it now, but that's what I did back then. So it was just a lot of grafting, a lot of like passion and wanting to do it. And yeah, motivation. I mean, yeah, I was busy, but I was young. I had energy. I couldn't do it now.
Yeah, I think the energy's is harder to come by these days, for myself as well. So yeah, I reckon I was probably the same about that kind of age group. And I remember, like, you know, I dropped out of college, but I did do it briefly. And I remember with lecturers at the time saying, I had one really good lecturer. Well, I had two actually, but what I found because the internet, it was changing everything at the time. They were given, in order to pass a test, you were having to say things that were just clearly not true. I think off the top of my head, you know, things like how they were saying that MySpace was the most important thing to do online. And by that point, as someone who was young, I could tell that MySpace was already on its way out. So it felt like, because I was actually getting physical experience in the scene, that a lot of it wasn't really relevant to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a bit, yeah, I suppose the energy was there to just sort of start up. So at what point do you start your own company?
Yeah, so I mean, I got my foot in the door in London, and then I got a job offer up in Liverpool to work for a promotion company to do their PR. So I moved up. I did that for a few years, and then along coinciding with that, I had the opportunity, because it was a small company, to actually start my own shop alongside it. So that's what I did. And once I kind of had that secured, so I then started pursuing music I was into, people I wanted to work with and stuff I wanted to do. And just, half the time, if you don't ask, you don't get. I just started contacting people asking about whether they'd be interested in me to work with them. And just, I don't know, I suppose a good example is with working with Rhymesayers. So some of those artists, like Brother Ali, it's like I've actually mentioned before. I remember sending an email, or two probably, heard nothing back. And then the email about 4 months later saying, do you want to have like a conference call? I had a conference call. It's like a 2 hour phone call, really good, really good chat. Both of those guys now are really good friends of mine at the time. And then it was about, I kept in touch, kept like keeping touch now and again, but it was about a year and a half later, where Brother Ali was doing a UK tour. This was like 2018, I think it was 18. No, it can't have been, would have been before that. Maybe 2018, 17. And I basically emailed and just said, she's doing a few dates for me to get involved. So basically, they said, yeah, fine. I'll go involved, do a really good job on it. And kind of things snowballed from there, really. So I suppose it's the persistence thing as well. It's just contacting people, then keeping in touch, forming relationships, find the right moment, and just keeping on it, I suppose, keeping on the case without being too intense. Just finding that right balance,
Yeah, it seems to be what there's a secret sauce to it, where it is you've got to be persistent but not annoying. And some people are just really good at, from my point of view, not so much with the podcast, but more with whether that's people trying to blag a slot on a festival stage that I'm running, or, get on to a gig that I'm doing. There's some people that are just really annoying and they can't help it. They just constantly bother you. And there's some people that are, like you said, the word persistent, where you're like, they're cheeky and I like it. So I totally agree with what you're saying there. With regards to your clients, what is the situation? So obviously you said Rhymesayers, it was you that contacted them. In general now, do people come to you, or do you still see something that you would like to get involved with and then you start the conversation?
It's about 50-50, to be honest, mate. I get contact. I had actually had an email today from a Liverpool folk singer. She's amazing and I really want to work with her. So you get these things that come through usually every week.
Do you read every email? So I try and listen to every single email, but I can't do it. So that's a timing issue as well, isn't it? As a lot of it is a bit luck, where someone with that Liverpool folk singer that you loved, if they'd sent that email at a different time on a different day, you may not have had the same reaction.
Yeah, I think generally what I do is I will plan the listing alongside what work I needed to do. So if I'm doing admin work or going through tedious stuff, I think, hey, this is the good time of the week. I will put on the music I've been sent. I'll listen to it while I'm working. If I need to write press releases, be creative in my mind, then it's not happening. But then it depends on the time of the week. I generally plan my week out with how I'm going to do things. So Mondays, so usually people release music on a Friday. So the Monday I'm usually catching up. I'm researching where results have come out, where things have come, and I'll feedback to clients. And probably those kind of times I'll just listen to music in the background. So people are sending me stuff, I'll listen then. So it depends on the time of the week. If I'm being creative, I can't do it.
That's a really good point, because obviously from the majority of the artists that I've seen you work with, it's hip-hop, so you're obviously going to be into your lyrics. So for me, the only kind of music I can listen to great. Is maybe like some lo-fi instrumental stuff or whatever, but lyrics just totally distract me. There is the right kind of boring, kind of more boring admin-y type stuff, the kind of stuff that you could do in your sleep.
Expenses are a killer. Always putting it off.
The tax returns and stuff like that as well. Yeah. You need some proper good hip hop for that. What some amazing hip hop that you work with? We've mentioned earlier on, and the people like Sarok and Slug of Atmosphere, who you introduced me to have on the show, and now you've got them on your album, which you must be buzzing about. as a fan.
And now an
actual collaborator.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, I mean, it's about, I don't know, it's getting to know people. And I think, I guess people always say, you know, it's about who you know, but I think also it's about forming organic relationships and really getting to know people as well, forming friendships in whatever way you can. I mean, those two are good examples of people who just wouldn't just collaborate with anyone. They'd only deal with people that they know, people they trust, people they've got to know. And that all comes from the first making contact and then just being cool, as you say, not being too crazy with like being too intense with people, also just trying to keep a good balance, you know, stay in touch, but also don't be too like over the top with what you're, you know, how you're approaching them. So,
yeah, and how does what's the overlap between, so say for example, one of the American artists is coming over to the UK to tour, is there an overlap between you and the booking agents or like the management, or it's just because this is kind of sort of like an interesting to see sort of behind the scenes here. Is it does management, the booking agent, do you sometimes speak to each other and try and help promote the tour, or how does it work? I know it's mostly releases that you deal with, but I'm just wondering if there's any element of you getting involved in promoting a tour.
Yeah, I mean, pre-COVID, I was doing a lot more of that. I'm doing some now, but it's purely, if one of those guys comes over here, I'm just trying to get them interviews on land. I got Cyroc, a few cool BBC things in the past. Like, it depends, but just trying to get them whatever they, you know, whatever come on them over here. But, I mean, I don't book the tours or anything like that. It's purely just trying to promote it when they're here, so getting them onto certain radio, podcasts, stuff like that I can get them onto, really. So,
and that's what a good PR person does. What would you say is, how can someone tell the difference between a good PR person or someone who's good at that's going to be helpful and someone that isn't? Because obviously I know that as an artist myself, you do get lots of emails from random PR companies wanting to work. What was the kind of sort of pitfalls that people should try and avoid to get? Because obviously you're very good at your job. I get your emails and I answer them. You're finding a way to stand out in the barrage of emails. But yeah, for somebody that maybe can't afford PR or somebody that's considering getting a PR company, how do you know it's a good company?
It's mainly, first thing is genre, dude. So genre, understanding what the style of music is. I mean, if you're like a metal band and you're contacting a PR company who seems to do loads of pop music and they get back to you like, oh, hey, you know, well, blah, 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 I'd be freaking careful. Like, just genre, I think style of music is the first thing. I mean, I will generally do hip hop, kind of funk, jazz, indie, folk music, alternative, is those kind of genres. You know, if a pop artist contacted me, I would just politely say no. Actually, some guy contacted me the other week and it was some crazy, it was like Aphex Twin in Saturn. It was insane. The music was crazy, right? Like, I couldn't get my head around it. But I, you know, politely declined. I was like, it's good, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. But if a company just says, oh, yeah, you know, we can do this and that, I'm just saying, you know, be careful with who you're contacting. Research their website, researching who they work with, research what they do. Ask them for result sheets, you know, as in who they work with. Ask for examples, feedback examples. I mean, all the projects I do, I keep it simple. I use Google Drive. I have like a Google sheet. Then in the end, it's a PDF. So if people ask me, you know, can you send me, you know, what can you do for me? I send the result sheets. I don't say what I could. I don't say, oh, this kind of crap. Like, oh, I can get you onto this, get you onto that. I believe the proof is in the pudding, not, you know, all this kind of, yeah, some people talk bollocks, basically. So I will send over stuff I've done and I will just send those results. And within the genre as well. So I've had a couple of hip-hop artists recently as well. So I did like Rakim's recent album. I've done like, there's a few things I've done recently. So I've just sent them all the stuff I've done for the same genre with facts, and it's card hole facts, and they can contact the people, other people involved they want to, you know, to get proof. That's really, it's all about that, man. I mean, geez. Or if you get an instant email back from someone, you know, we'll do this, we'll do this. The package thing as well. So I don't do packages. I don't do like gold, silver, bronze stuff. You know, I don't advertise budgets on my website either, for the simple reason, I just think, like, how can you advertise what you do for someone until you've actually heard the music? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Absolutely. And for people that don't really, maybe don't understand the power of a good PR person, I suppose for me, from the other end, is you've already built up these contacts and these relationships, so that's why when I get an email from you, I'm going to open it and see what you've got to offer. So is there anything else that, for somebody that's maybe considering getting a PR company, is that the main thing, the fact that they've already developed these relationships and they're going to get an answer? Because, as you know, I mean, you're lucky if, you know, if I was to send 100 emails out to magazines, radios, podcasts, whatever, I would probably get, what do you think, 1%? If it was a cold call, kind of, what do you think the percentage is compared to what you could do in your world compared to what someone just trying to do it themselves would get?
Yeah, man. I mean, it is about who you know. It's about building up the contacts. I mean, I've got a huge database, a gazillion emails, loads of people I don't even still really know. It's a minefield. I think the other thing as well is time. So the time somebody like me is taking to build up those contacts, the time I've taken to get to know people, if it's somebody starting from the bottom, you know, some people I've known for, like, I've known for you for a few years. There's some people I've known for like 15 years, maybe, you know, like known for years and years. And even, you know, even then they'll sometimes respond about something or be up for something after all that amount of time. So if you're completely new, it's, you know, they're, and especially if also like being an artist email. So if it's an email from an artist, email from somebody they don't know, then it's a lot harder to get that attention. I mean, a good example is, so the Huey Show, BBC Six Music on a Saturday morning, I know the producer, Tom, and I've known him for years as well. And yeah, I mean, maybe 15% of the time he'll get back to me. 10% of the time they'll feature it on the Huey Show. But then the other 90, 85%, he won't even respond. And it's not because he doesn't know me, it's just because that's the way it is. So, and that's for someone who knows him, if you see what I'm saying. That's a good example. But
yeah, that's a perfectly good example, because I think a lot of people sometimes take it personally when they don't get featured on a show or they don't get picked for a festival. And I think that for people that are in the outside, if you are an artist starting out, it's nothing personal. It's to do with the saturation of music. There's just so much music out there. Mm-hmm. It could be timing. It could be there's already a similar artist already on the bill. There's a million different reasons why that can happen. And that is interesting to hear that, you know, that's a great record, getting 10% of your suggestions on the radio. Well, everyone else has just got, I would say, 1%. I suppose, I think for, like, from a radio producer's point of view, they're looking to somebody like yourself. There's, like, even though from a professional point of view, there's certain people on my Facebook feed who just really love music. They're maybe bookers or whatever, and when they start raving about something, and you start feeling that, or if two people are raving about something, you're like, right, I need to check this out. Just because we are swamped with so much music now that we need people like yourself, whether that's a PR person or a festival booker or a manager, just somebody that's going to lots of gigs that does have the ear to the ground, and they're curating it for you, because if they're saying it's good, they might not always be right, it might not always be to my taste.
It's subjective, though, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's definitely worth a listen. It's definitely worth a listen, though. What about for somebody who is just, that maybe doesn't have money to pay for PR, is there any advice you would give to somebody who is just starting out as an artist, who's just hitting their head off a wall, sending emails and nobody's responding to them?
So, email-wise, first thing I'd say is create a professional email address. So don't use like your Gmail, Hotmail. Does Hotmail still exist?
Well,
but you know,
I remember 10 years ago somebody saying that there was the top three rules of the music business, and it was never trust a promoter with a Hotmail address. I think Hotmail does. I think it's MSN now, but it does kind of exist. You see it occasionally in the wild.
I mean, I'd say like get a domain. You know, buying a domain for email address is like a few quid a year. It's peanuts. Get a professional email address for your brand, for your artist brand. Okay, so that then they're getting an email from something more professional looking. You do have to have a website to do it, but at least get a domain, get an email address. And then the next thing is to make sure that you have everything ready. So don't plan a release, don't plan anything until you've got your assets, your masters, if there's any explicit lyrics in it, having clean edits, artwork, your press shots, a press release. Now, if you know the word press release, I think scares some people. It used to scare me when I was, you know, 20 years ago, whatever. So if you have problems with that stuff, I'd say it's tempting, but don't use AI to create a press release.
You can see a mail off.
yeah, man. No, absolutely. You go on to Fiverr.com. Fiverr.com is a great place. People on there advertise to write press releases. If it's something you really struggle with, you haven't got a friend who can do it, you can pay a few quid, like literally Fiverr, 10 quid, and somebody will write a press release for you. I'd say get your text, your presentation ready. So get all the assets. So if you've got some good text, press shots, artwork, hard copies of your music, don't attach anything to an email. Never attach big files to an email. Use Dropbox. Don't use WeTransfer is great if you're sending music to people quickly, but use something like Dropbox, like I always share with you, Mark. It's like, don't freaking do that as well. I'm trying to think. And don't do an essay in an email either. Keep it simple, quite short. And I personally put the press release into the email below. I don't attach it. I just try to streamline things as much as possible. Stream it, make it easy, simple, quick. Because you know, think about who's receiving it, I suppose. But give yourself the best chances just to make things simple, simple, simple.
I want to see what kind of music it is. Maybe a couple of quotes. Where is this person from? Maybe just the main information. We don't need the life story. Although although it's great when somebody says they attach an extended bio maybe to the website for more to read it. But we're scanning it to see whether we want to listen to the music, and we want, and you know, I suppose if I've opened the email, I will probably listen anyway. But you want to save the person's time. You've got to remember that the person at the other end is probably underpaid and stressed out as well. So you just want to make it easy for them. And I suppose we touched on two interesting things there. One was the domain name, because I've got a Gmail account. I'm slagging the Hotmail promoters, but here's me sitting with you call that radio@gmail.com. But I've got a website. So can I just attach a website, an email to that? How does that work? I don't actually know this.
So you're asking someone who's not the most technical person in the world, but I think, yeah. So I created my website, montadtunes.com, for my artist profile. I just went onto domain site and I paid 8 quid for the year and I got that.com. I think places like GoDaddy and all that, you can get your first, I think you basically, if you buy a domain, you can get the email address and then through your Google account. So my Andy@steamacattlepr email is through Google Mail. Basically, there's a very simple way. If you buy the domain, you can get the email address.
I've got the domain. I've got the domain already. I've got my domain.
You should be able to do it quite easy then.
I'll Google that. But that's an interesting point. I didn't even put that together. So I'm learning, and so I thank you for that. And probably one last thing you touched on there that I found quite interesting. It's like, as you correctly said, make sure you've got your masters and your artwork and all that stuff ready. You want it to look slick. You want to attract people to it. You don't want to be sending a rough demo. You know that. Keep that for your friends. You want to be sending a mixing master track. You want to have the artwork look popping and out. But how long would you say do you need a? Would you look for a run-in? So say for example, if an artist approached you, you really like the music they were making, but they're like, my album's out next week. Have you got a line where you're like, no, that's too late or that's too early?
Well, it would be, my first question would be, is it already on up with their distribution? So with a distribution company, you know, these days, it's what everyone's doing, whether it's Ditto Music, Horus, or DistroKid, whoever it is, an album needs to have been submitted, I'd say, to be safe, 8 weeks before, maybe 7 weeks, because they can ensure that everything is up and ready and out to go. If the artist said to me, you know, I've got a week till my album comes out, you know, and if it's already in setup, if they've got everything sorted, then I'd say, well, what's the single? So really, a week before, you want to be pushing a singular track with that. I would be panicking if they said that to me, of course. I'd be freaking panicking, mate. It would be a nightmare, but I would try my best to help them. But no, I think really what you want to be doing is if you've got everything up with your distro and if it's all been submitted and ready to go, about I'd say 7-8 weeks before at least. You need to have your plan.
That is interesting because obviously that's kind of what I was thinking about. But I noticed you used the word at least. Obviously, there must be a time limit the other way. Too early. I mean, is there a too early? Like for, if you had an album, say, wait, we're the 17th of October just now, as we're talking. So say, for example, somebody had an album out on December. So ideally, obviously, let's pretend it's not Christmas, because that's an unconscious, since everyone
knows. Yeah, avoid Christmas, unless it's a Christmas
film. Avoid Christmas. My first album, I think, we released on Hug Me Nay. Don't do that, guys. So what I mean is that, because obviously, say for example, you had an album in December 17th, forget about Christmas. Is it too early? Because like, obviously, you don't want to get the hype going too early before the album comes out, or do you?
No, I think that would be a dream. If somebody said 2 months from now, I'd probably start rolling out to radio from start of November. About 6 weeks before, start talking to people about it, because really you're building up and up to it. Hopefully they'd have a signature track or a single. So, but even like podcasts, stuff like that, you know, I want to be talking to podcasts a few weeks before. So as long as it's up on distro, because if it's on distribution, if it's, the release is up and locked and loaded, then it's fine. There's not really so much time pressure. But it's them making sure that they've also done their Spotify for Artists pitch as well. That's really important. So make sure it's on release radar, because that needs to be a few weeks before it comes out for like whatever track or single they're pushing. You know, that's
it's important actually
as well.
It's actually a 1 week limit for release radar, because I just caught it by the skin of my teeth last month with a single that I was releasing. I've never had one of the editorial playlists, but
nor have I. But
there's a secret.
I know people who have though. I know people who have.
Yeah, no,
like,
absolutely. I've got friends. Shout-outs to Declan Welch and the Decadent West. They went huge with a few editorial playlists, and as far as I'm aware, they just put in a pitch themselves. A little tidbit, I actually got from Josephine Sillars, who does a bit of PR stuff as well. A great musician. She got picked once or twice, I think, as well. And her advice is to basically tell the person looking at it what it sounds like. So basically, rather than coming up with all these adjectives and explaining it, it's just very simple. People that like this will like that. And I think a human looks at it and listens to it and goes, oh, that does make sense. And then I think that's how. That's what I heard. It's never worked for me. Never worked for me at all. The playlist curators have now... I mean, now there's this kind of sort of a payola type thing going on as well. I've noticed that there's people with... I don't think they work for Spotify, but they've got independent playlists that have got thousands of people. But then we started getting into the bots world, which we're just going to stay away from the bots. But because obviously, well, there's no point in having 50,000 plays and none of them are actually going to be real fans.
No, no. I mean, like, I know quite a few private players curators. So for clients, stuff that I push out is to organic playlists, people who built them organically over time. And, you know, I do that as like an extra thing, you know, just like part of what I do. But yeah, man, there's bots. I mean, especially if you send those emails, you get the instant reply saying, oh, yeah, we'll pay 60 quid to have this on the playlist and all this kind of crap. It's like, oh, you know, 20 quid for lower down. And then, like, it's a totally random mix of genre and stuff like that. It's just, yeah, it's mad. But
no. I've got a wee organic playlist that I do as well. And I think we're up to about 350 listeners, but it's real people that are checking it out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'd be good to sort of get on more of those because people are actually checking them out. I want to go back.
A lot of blogs are doing that as well now. You know, so I find. Sorry to interrupt, mate. A lot of blogs do their own playlists, and that's another great thing. So, you know, that's something else he was pushed for as well. So they connect playlists to because it helps them, but because of their fans and followers, blogs use playlists as well, and they're all genuine listeners. So,
and it's a great way to keep the blogs to stay relevant as well, because you know there's a few blogs that it's a strange word for blogs. You know, it's kind of the YouTube sort of podcasting's kind of came in. But there's definitely still a place for it. What about the what's it? Is it Submit Hub or something like that? Have you ever had any success with that? I think I tried it. I think you get so many free submissions and then you start paying for it.
Yeah.
But it does go to real blogs. But I've never had any success through that myself. To be honest, I haven't given it a fair crack. But I have tried it once or twice. I've never paid them, but I have tried to submit it a couple of times. Like it's kind of like American blogs and stuff like that, but I never really had any luck with that. Have you ever had any luck with those people?
I mean, I'm aware of it. I kind of know people have used it. I've been on it and checked it out. I mean, obviously for my work, I don't use it, but it's, I mean, I suppose because either through people that I know, blogs that I know, contacts that I can talk to alongside, most of the time, I've just found contacts through blogs. There's, you know, so my tips are, if you have the time to do this, so you go onto blogs, there's usually a contact form, you know, contact us without an actual direct email address. So then next thing you want to do is go into find their Facebook page, go to about, see if they have an email there, and failing that, go onto their Instagram, and then on your phone, not on your computer, Instagram, and contact, and then you'll find an email there. So 85% of the time, the contact us page, which is just like a generic, you know, non-direct thing, go Facebook, find it. Or sometimes they're Twitter, but not often. Sorry, X, whatever it is now. But Instagram. So So basically, that's how I find contacts. So you could use Submit Hub as well, but I find that's my way that I've got contacts over many years is going through that process basically. Because a contact form is a pain in the backside and it takes forever. But actually find an email address, you can then email people directly and that's better. So
Ed, go on to your own album just now. So you've got all this years of experience to apply to your album which is Echoes of the Cosmos, which is an amazing album to check out. You sent me a private SoundCloud link, which is great, and I believe there's probably a Dropbox download thing as well, which is good to give the person the option, because SoundCloud works really well. You can just click through it, and also you've got the Dropbox option if you want to do something like you were saying. Download a little playlist for you while you're doing your boring admin tasks. So what's the difference now to promoting your own stuff? So it's like I help promote other people's music, but I always find it's really difficult to promote my own stuff because, you know, I feel weird talking about myself in the third person or the first person. So
do I.
How are you doing it? Obviously, you contacted me just saying, this is mine, by the way. So I suppose that's the advantage of already having the contacts.
Yeah.
But have you contacted anybody that you don't already have a working relationship with yet?
No, no. I mean, there's people I know who've, I mean, I've had some support because, like, I've had a few singles to date. Actually, before I say this, I'm going to just say one thing about SoundCloud. That's a really good tip to give to people.
Yeah.
So if you're promoting a track before it comes out, SoundCloud is still the best tool to use that to have a private link. So if you're pitching to radio, I'd always say pitch to radio before it comes out. Have it privately on SoundCloud, and then make sure, I think you have to go to share. Oh, there it is. So basically you have to go to share, and then copy this like big long link. And then in the email, embed it. Don't just share the link in the email. Embed it to, like, you know, this is my, you know, whatever it might be, like song type, artist title, song title, and then email that over. Then it's the best tool because media love it. Media love just having that quick link, quick listen link. You can attach the files afterwards or whatever, but like that's one tip I wanted to give. But with me, with contacting people, I mean, it's just, I've basically just done the job I do for other people for myself. That's what I've done. I've had no BBC success so far, but it's fine. I've had John Kennedy, XFM, has featured at least one of my singles. Chuck D from Public Enemy on his Rap Station show is featured too.
That's incredible.
So it's about who you know. It's also about the right people to talk to. I've had loads of support so far, like media wise from what I've done, but it's the same with everyone. It's like you can't expect everyone to do what you want them to do. It's never going to happen, you know.
But Chuck D's an interesting one because he actually does seem to listen to everything. He's actually played Stanley Odd, Scottish hip hop, and it's quite a niche thing getting Scottish hip hop getting played, you know, even in Scotland, never mind outside of Scotland. And Chuck D, I remember Chuck D played Stan Lloyd, and I think a couple other Scottish artists. So you've got somebody there that actually loves music and is going to give everything a fair crack of the whip. With the album, so let's just talk about it. So you've got River Nelson, love that track. You've got Slug of Atmosphere, Concept, Lane Schuller, Napoleon the Legend, Sarok, Master Killer, Copyright. What's
copyright?
Incredible. What was the process of making this album? And did you know from the start that you were going to have collaborations on it, or did it start as a more instrumental type project?
Well, I mean, I started doing everything over COVID, so I've always been a musician. I've always played loads of instruments, as I said before, but I can't write songs. I've never been a songwriter. I can't do lyrics and melody. I can't do the whole sitting there with the guitar or piano. Oh, this is a great melody. Here's some lyrics. It's not me. I can't do it. I can create music, but I can't create songs, if that makes sense. So I just started creating loads of music over COVID. And then it kind of sparked from a lot of those guys you mentioned I already knew from working with them. So I asked a few people, a few of my peers privately, you know, is this good? Do you think this is quite... Is it all right? Is it crap? I don't know. One or two first track instrumental tracks I did, I asked Evidence from Dilated Peoples. I asked a few people who know what's good, and they all said, it's pretty good. So I just kind of took it from there. Luckily for me, having worked with people, I had the blessing of connecting and being able to ask them if they thought it was any good, you know, because when you do it yourself, I mean, we all know it's like you can do as much as you can, but you don't really know, is it actually good, or are they just being nice? Like when I was in the band back in the day, you know, you do gigs, everyone's like, oh, it's really good, mate. Yeah, but they think, but is it good, or are you just being nice, you know? So when I actually figured out maybe it was quite good, then I kind of started just talking to people that I knew and just built it from there, track from track. And for me, it was pretty much just getting ideas. The ideas that came through, things I thought would be good to produce and create, kind of just how it's progressed. The idea for the album, after a few tracks came to my head, and you know, it kind of starts quite cinematic and then it goes a little bit apocalyptic and dark, and then it comes a bit more fun at the end, is how I describe it. But it all just pieced together in my head, I suppose, you know. But all the people I did it with, I mean, Napoleon the Legend as well, like, he's a good friend of mine, like, he's an amazing rapper. There's actually more things I'm planning to do. In fact, you mentioned Apollo Brown and Formal Green interview. I'm hopefully going to do something with Formal Green. There's a track, a new idea I have, which I'll do next year, which he's up for. And it's about who you know, man.
Fillmore Green was lovely. You know, we had a technical nightmare during that show. I don't know if
it was hilarious. I remember.
Oh my God. I can't even remember what was going wrong, but everything was going wrong. I switched to my phone and tried to do the show, and Fillmore Green thought it was hilarious. I think he thought it was good, but I was just very embarrassed because it just everything went wrong that day.
So he's got an album. It's either just come out or it's coming out very soon. He's been dropping loads of singles through Melling Music Group at the moment, but he's doing his album at the moment, which is amazing, really good.
Right, and with regards to you also were saying to me that you were doing your DJ debut, I think you said, but it was a 4-hour shift. So how did that go?
Yeah, oh, amazing. Yeah, good. I'm going to do another one December. I'm going to mix in. It's a luxury as well of just playing your own stuff, just playing stuff that you love, and I mean. Again, with DJing, I think it's all about, if you know the music, it's fine. You got to understand what you're doing, understand what the sound is. I've basically done a mix of trip-hop, hip-hop, a bit of funk, a bit of like lo-fi, but just understanding, knowing the music, really. And I'm going to be collaborating with someone else locally soon to actually start some sort of show, hopefully, and just start mixing him doing vocals over more of my music eventually and just see where it goes. But it's just good fun. It's good to get out there as well, man. You know, good to even locally get out there and do things with people. And yeah, you know, but I'm never going to DJ The Killers or Lady Gaga, you know.
But it's okay. Although you will be asked, I'm sure, by a drunken hen party at some point.
No, seriously.
No requests. So have you actually got a date? Do you want to plug the gig you're doing in December? Is it in the diary?
I'm actually meeting Venny tomorrow, so I don't know yet. Unfortunately,
don't know yet.
Unfortunately, no, I don't know yet. But...
Well, that sounds cool. It sounds like the more you're going to be doing stuff like that, then there could be potentially a live show with this album. Is this kind of like a sort of part of the launch? Are you going to be sort of incorporating this into sort of launch party of any kind, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm doing, again, it's time. It's, you know, having a 9-year-old kid who hopefully is in bed right now, and all the rest of that reality of life. So it's like, I found as well, because really, the probably creating your own music and doing your own thing, it's like fourth down the list, you know. It's like my actual work, my actual business comes first for the actual real clients, and then it's like family. So by the time you get to your own thing, it's like finding the time as well. So my music was already, I got it already, and it's been on distro for like 4, 5, 6 weeks now. I'm starting to promote it, but I'm doing 12 tracks digital. I've also launched my website, montagetunes.com. I've started my own merchandise line as well, which is really exciting. But it's like, then next year I'm going to do a physical release as well. I'm going to do a deluxe version with like maybe at least 4 or 5 new tracks. I'm going to put it on vinyl next year. My plan's to just take it steady. So I'm going to do a digital release, and then next year, and I think if the live stuff's happening as well, I'm going to maybe look towards doing that and then going all out there next year. I just think some people get too panicky, they do too much at once. It's good to spread things out, just keep the wave moving, I suppose, you know. So I'm looking at options as well for physical at the moment. I wanted to put out a vinyl. I don't think 12 tracks is justifiable for physical. That's my personal opinion these days. I reckon you should have at least 16, maybe 17, 18 tracks to have it as a, like a physical release. That's my plan. So.
That's a good idea. We were actually looking at vinyl. We've got an album coming out in March. So we've got a label, just a wee DIY label who brought out something before our last vinyl. And they tell me that it's 3 months. So apparently if I get the masters in by mid-December, we'll have it for the album launch at the end of March, which is actually not bad. There was a point where I think it went up to 9 months at one point. I don't know if that was a lockdown issue or something, but
that's
it was
a long time.
Yeah, but I think 3 months, I think we can do that. I think we can do it, finish it by December, to be out by March. But yeah, it's a costly venture to do it. And it's just about picking the right amount. We'll probably just go for 300, I think, right amount for us. It's because it's like if you do too little, then the cost goes up. It's difficult to get the right balance. So the album comes out. Are you going to have it on Bandcamp? How can people support it?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah. So it comes out a week tomorrow, Friday, the 25th of October. Whenever this comes out. Everything is under Montau Tunes. So any social media, anywhere is Montau Tunes. I thought about that before I launched as well, back in the day, you know, having the same handle for everywhere, it does help a lot.
It makes a massive difference because you can put that art sign under everything you're doing, every little, any artwork that's going on. I tried to do it, but it's not. It was too late for me for some of my projects by the time they came out. I'll put the links for anyone. If you're listening to this in the audio podcast or you're watching YouTube, there'll be links in the info because we'll drop it after it's been released. So we're actually in the past. It's the 17th of October, so we'll drop it maybe on the day of around about the release date. Check it out. I love the album. There's some really, anyone who's into hip hop, you'll definitely recognise some big hitters there. And how would you describe it? So it's got a lo-fi kind of dreamy sound to it. Have you thought about?
Yeah, I mean, like it's kind of, I'd say, a combination of hip hop, trip hop, cinematic, even a couple of elements of classical. There's like a bit of lo-fi, electronic is how I describe it. Having people like Sarok, I mean, Sarok's incredible as well. So just, you know, having people like that on it is really, obviously Master Killer. So Master Killer is just, I don't know. I think he's so freaking underrated from Wu-Tang. I think for me personally, like, he's probably not my number one Wu-Tang MC, but you know, I don't know, sometimes we all get bogged down in the whole, you know, the top, you know, the dreaded lists. Master Killer is always near the bottom. I think he should be about halfway. Like, he's underrated. He's really freaking good. But there we go. That's my personal opinion.
Absolutely. 100%. And would you like to pick a song from the album that I can play us out with to give people a taste?
Oh, I'd say do Descendant of a Greek God featuring Napoleon the Legend and Sarok.
Excellent choice. Okay, we'll play that just now. Go and get the album. The best way to support the artist these days is to buy it on Bandcamp and then stream it all the time in Spotify, I think. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say so, man. Yeah, definitely. Obviously, Bandcamp. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Bandcamp Friday as well. That's the best time to buy it, is actually. That'll be Friday the 1st of November. Actually, that'll be the best time to buy it. Thank you so much, Andy. It's been great chatting to you. I love the album. I'm looking forward to giving it a few more listens as well. And thanks for all that. Really, I think that's really interesting advice you gave for musicians that are maybe starting out as well. So I really appreciate you giving me your time today. And I keep sending me anything good that pops up, mate.
Nice one. Thanks, Tom. I will do. Thank you.
Andy Kettle there. What a legend, sharing that great advice. And you might have also noticed something. That there's no adverts on our podcast, there's no sponsors, there's no funding. So if you enjoy the show and you think you're getting value from it, then please consider joining the Patreon at patreon.com/youcallthatradio. And now let's listen to a tune from Andy's new album, which is out today. under the name Montu. This is Descendants of a Greek God, featuring Sarok and Napoleon the Legend. Enjoy.
Yo, the Pharaoh is God. Mirror the father, the king of Siddhartha, the pinnacle, kin to the stars. Replenish my chemicals, knocking them off of their pedestal, kingdom is ours. Pyramids built in the image of Anunnaki and the strength of his parts. Engineering the DNA of the inner brain, which we be dripping his art. Manipulate particles, poly like Spartacus, prodigal son. Artists and chemists, you honest pretenders. We spearheaded genres and it's not a stunt. Line up my chakras, polish my karma, bomb it, prima donnas, you dummies are done. Natural alchemist, Pythagoras, teaches savages, algebra challenges one. Ten toe, live in the box and you leave in the box. What I speak is intense though. Amethyst, sapphire, topaz and emeralds, perching with gemstones. Ending is imminent for options primitive, juggernaut, prince, Poe. The moniker sacred, curses I break and bring fire and brimstone. Federal God with a God with a dominant squad, everything for my kinfolk.
Spartan women give birth to real men.
I'm the beginning and end. The Alpha Omega implanted my egg and created obsidian skin. Primordial born and tigress, I pray to Euphrates for dripping my chin. My shilling and queen, my edicts creating new Edens, I'm slithering in. While I'm bathing in roses and golden milk, yes, it's appropriate for creme de la creme. I'm the blueprint, y'all a replica, copy of carbon, he's black. Features this edge to the marble, predate your icon silhouettes when my royalty stack. Y'all are my seeds, by the conjugal evil, my uterine lines for the atom in half. My nuclear family is who set the standard for cultural shift. Watch the planet react, I'm the 10th wonder. My underground burgers influence these stars that y'all pitch intense under. They came to the crazy applause, but I cook these clapbacks like a mixed thunder. Put some respect on my pantheon, black gods in each anthem my pen conjure. Blaze you with SG for rousing a dragon awake from my REM slumber. Rock.
You call that radio?